Hello, everyone. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz. And before we start, I want to tell you about an exciting new product I've discovered. It's not legal in Canada at all, but no, sorry, that's my lousy attempt at being an influencer, which I really had no handle on until like a week ago, but... I'm learning, you know, old man Hertz can learn things as we go along in this life, so.
I think you should probably get an Instagram account before you become an influencer.
What's Instagram, Adam Donaldson? No, I know it is. I don't want any part of it whatsoever.
Cool.
Speaking as a
You were off to a good start for your career as an influencer.
Speaking as a BlackBerry user. Anyway, okay.
Yeah, tell me about it. Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and Spotify. Spotify is still relatively new, so I almost forgot it there. Anyway.
What's a Spotify? No.
We're doing so well. Today, there is still a lot of tension between Canada and China over the jailing of a Huawei executive. There is some way out of this, though, thanks to John McCallum and Donald Trump. We'll shed some light on that.
Combo there.
And then some kids from Kentucky had an eventful weekend in Washington, D.C. We'll tell you all about it because it really hasn't gotten much coverage. And then finally, Brexit Plan B. Is it going about as well as the first plan, as Plan A there for Brexit? And we'll talk about that. First, I mean, I think last week has taught us that if you don't talk about Doug Ford for a couple of weeks, bad things happen. It hasn't all been bad news, actually. Because yesterday, and oddly enough, this news came through as I was sitting in a city council meeting, or just like immediately after a city council meeting, was that the Doug Ford government pulled Schedule 10 of Bill 66. Schedule 10 was the provision that allowed for the open for business bylaw, the quote-unquote open for business bylaw, which was basically a ram, a battering ram with which companies could bring forward proposals for employment lands, development plans for employment lands, and it would skip through various procedures like environmental assessments, and you wouldn't be able to appeal this to the LPAT. And it would just eventually get going. It would run rubber shod over any other outstanding piece of legislation. It basically gave the Minister of Municipal Affairs and Housing sort of a rubber stamp to just let any development going, whether the people in the municipality liked it or not. But it's gone now. There's still a lot of horribleness in Bill 66, though, it's worth noting. But in the meantime, Doug Ford has opened up a new front in the For the People business case, which is to reduce tuition by 10% across the board, which sounds pretty good. But in actuality, it's going to mean, and actually, just to show the result of when you put a businessman in charge of the government, Moody's has already come out and warned about the financial stability of Ontario's universities and colleges because of this move. So there you go.
Oh, yeah.
And that's before getting into the concerns of people who work at this very institution.
Yes.
By that, I mean CFRU.
So this is, it was initially floated as a good thing. And of course, the response is, oh, great, tuition's going to be 10% less. But then the snowball from there was the changes to OSAP, which are also going to happen. People will have to pay their loans right away.
Yeah.
What the Liberals were calling free tuition is just gone. So the, let's call them the incentive things or bringing people here. I don't think there's any change to international students. International students pay a whack of cash to come here. And so, but, and then after this, of course, the 10% slash across the board was announced. And it's going to be interesting as to how the attempts will be made for that 10% to be made up, because on the one hand, the government's like, well, we need fiscal responsibility, blah, blah, blah. And then the other, they're like, well, the universities are autonomous, so they should be able to do what they want. Well, if they're autonomous, then like, why do you care, particularly about the should we call it the clubs situation? But something else that will directly affect this station, I alluded to it on Twitter earlier today, is that you will be able to choose come September your, I was going to say benefits. This is not really benefits. The things that are going to likely be cut are beneficial. So what's going to happen is you'll be given, and I compared it to the, when the Apple terms and conditions come up and it's 45 pages long and you just go, agree.
Mm-hmm.
If people think they're going to be able to save some money by opting out of certain clubs or ones that they don't like, or the bus pass, which isn't really a club but is a net benefit and actually a really good price when you add up what it would cost to take the bus on its own, you can opt out. And I did sort of a straw poll of some students. I said, well, you know, and a couple of them are actually...
You did a straw poll.
I did a straw poll. I gave them straws and said, here. A couple of them listened to the show and CFRU regularly. And I said, you know, give me the truth here. It's like, if people have the option to choose, what will they do? He's like, oh, they'll opt out to probably to the tune of like 95%. Because if you don't have to pay for something, why would you?
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of the clubs, if you're able to look at the Guelph list of clubs, is some things are like 20 cents. Like, what costs 20 cents now? not much. But rather than just sort of having this slate, I guess, it's to the tune of a couple hundred bucks here, you get to opt out. So, you know, the CFRU is one of the things that people will be able to opt out on, and the campus community stations across the province that are in universities and colleges. And our fee, I think, is around $7.50. So for the price of...
Not to mention, like, the Ontarian.
And the Ontarian.
And the CSA.
And this is... It's taking a stab at the media, and my perspective on it, and this is just my opinion, is that the people 10 years ago that tried to infiltrate and kill clubs off are now part of the Ford government, because I listened
to... Oh, the OPERG. Yeah.
I listened to Brad Evoy, ex of the station, who was on CBC Ottawa with a young conservative person, and it was directly... Well, he had put forward an initiative, the conservative person, to go after the clubs, like, well, I shouldn't have to pay for this because I don't use it, blah, blah, blah. The usual arguments. But now, I guess they have some influence on policy, at least it's looking like that, in my perspective. And so that's the knives are out.
Well, I mean, something very similar to that happened in Guelph almost 10 years ago,
yes,
where they tried to put, or like the Young Conservatives tried to put conservative board members onto OPERG.
Mm-hmm.
And the people in that club were, oddly enough, like Michael Sona and Christian conservative, like that crowd who would go on to graduate and be involved in the Pierre Poutine scandal.
That's a heck of a coincidence. A political coincidence.
It's, well, that's a good political coincidence. Yeah, so, I mean, that's, you know, that it kind of stretches into the realm of conspiracy theory, but, you know, that it kind of sounds pretty bad. I mean, think it's like this was 10 years ago. Well, a lot of people, if they had stayed in conservative politics, would probably be in the part of the upper echelon of the current conservative party.
Well, some of them probably are.
Part of the concern about this, though, is because I was at the Board of Governors meeting yesterday, and I was able to overhear some of President Vaccarino's comments about this. Above the drumming and the dinging and the klaxon of people
the
upset that
the things yes
the people upset that the UFG didn't vote to divest, but he was reporting that they have no details about what exactly how this exactly is going to be implemented or how exactly it's going to affect them. Keep in mind that this is supposed to go into effect in September.
Well, that's fairly typical, though, isn't it?
But I mean, the point is that they're approving the budget for next fall, the next fiscal. They're looking at that right now. So budget planning goes back to basically the day after the budget is passed. They start planning for the next year's budget. And so, you know, you have schools coping with a 10%, a loss of 10% of their tuition earnings. On top of it all, there's been no suggestion to add funding to universities in order to make up for that loss. That has not been part of the discussion so far. Two-thirds of an institution's total costs on average are people, salaries, and benefits. So if you're looking at where the big cuts are going to be, it's probably going to be on people. The question is also going to be, like, can the university then step in to help clubs stay around if they lose student fees? I mean, there's so much about this that's up in the air, and it's just – the offensive part isn't just the suggestion that this should happen. I mean, you can make – that's offensive all by itself. The offensive part is that, at least so far as this government is concerned, they make these wide-sweeping proclamations – these wide-sweeping announcements, and they don't seem to care about the consequences or how it's going to be implemented. And then on top of it all, they sell it as a good thing. It's like, oh, well, we're cutting 10% tuition. Yeah, but what's the eventual cost going to be in terms of campus life?
Yeah, and it's under the illusion of choice. And people, because you're only ever here, well, some of us stick around, but for most people, it's a temporary situation. But I mean, potentially, and we're talking worst case scenario here, is that everybody, because, say, CFRU and even the bus pass or the things that you're going to be able to opt out of do disappear. CFRU has a long history in town, 50 plus years at this point.
Well, the Ontarian,
right?
Too.
The Ontarian is 60 odd years.
Almost 70, actually.
A lot of people cut their teeth training there. I know someone in the room did. Or well, me.
It's very true.
Or this fine station. So I guess we're just giving you the heads up now, folks, is that potentially, and not to be Debbie Downers about it, but you know, we may not be here in this capacity by the time the year is out. I don't know where that's going to take the semester to sort it out, but the question is, where is the cash going to come from, especially when they're saying, okay, it's 10% across the board. So, of course, anyone who's going to ask for money at a post-secondary institution, the answer will be, unless you can provide it yourself or have a benefactor or corporate or whatever, is going to be, it's been a 10% cut. We can't do that. Every single thing. If you're looking for a pencil, it's going to be, sorry, man, 10%. So this is what, and I'm going to say we, because it does include we in this particular thing. It's not often that we end up in the news in our own way. but I don't know, maybe I should become an influencer and try and sell radio time on my Instagram account that doesn't exist yet.
I really hope that isn't the solution.
No. You gotta sit with a little tin can. Please give me a nickel. I want to do radio.
I mean, yeah, it's silly because when we were talking about this with Jenny Mitchell before the show started, that, you know, so much about campus life isn't just about school. It isn't just about classes. It isn't about textbooks. It isn't about athletics. Athletics, by the way, completely untouched.
I was hoping you wouldn't say that because my blood pressure's been running a little high, and as soon as I hear that, it's like,
yeah. So
is fitness or athletics? Is the football team essential?
Right, but athletics, and not to diminish athletics, but
oh, go ahead.
They are making. I mean,
save the nerds.
It's important to stay in shape, obviously, and you know, whether you're part of an intramural team, whether you're just, you know, getting into the gym or using the pool, or whether you're part of the football team or the hockey team or the you know, any of the teams that, you know, wear the Griffin jersey, it's important to stay in shape. But the government is making a judgment call that athletics is more important than student journalism, more important than community radio, more important than the Doctor Who Club, more important than the Guelph Pagan Society, more important than Campus for Christ, more important than Safe Walk, more important than the UPass, more important than Gherkin, and on and on and on and on. And those are just off the top of my head. So are you coming to school to just stick your head in the book and to run around the track a couple of times a week? Or are you coming to the university to educate yourself, and not just in terms of learning a trade, learning a profession, or learning about yourself, learning about who you are, learning about other cultures that you inevitably come into contact with here, maybe finding a different vocation? Where I began when I came here is not where I ended up. And it's because of getting involved here on campus.
The Adam A. Donaldson editorial is brought to you by Open Sources Guelph. No, that was good. You're right on there. And Doctor Who Club, if you need some cash, give me a call. I'll pay the nickel.
And let me just add, why is the chocolate bar size is getting smaller? to go full Andy Rooney. More broadly, in the big Canadian picture, we are in a kind of Cold War, it seems, with China. The United States had an extradition order out against Meng Wanzhou, who is Huawei's, I think she's the chief financial officer of Huawei. I keep mispronouncing it, but I'm pretty sure it's Huawei.
Huawei.
I'm going to say Huawei.
I never knew how to say it. I've seen it on signs and people's phones.
Yeah,
and it's
they
like
have an office
Huawei.
In Toronto, too.
Yes.
But it's the largest telecom company in China. It is largely successful because of its connection to the governing party, which is to say the government in China. This woman arrived in Vancouver. She was taken into custody by the Canadians. They are expecting an extradition order from the United States because of alleged fraud because of Huawei's dealings with Iran, which is under sanction. China apparently reciprocated by taking two Canadians into custody, and for specious reasons, there's a Canadian there charged with drug offenses, who's now finding himself on death row, which the Prime Minister said was arbitrary in terms of that sentencing. But then we enter into this picture, John McCallum, the Canadian ambassador to China, who says, you know what? China has a good case to get out of the extradition order.
That was an interesting press conference. I saw a little bit of it. It was supposed to be exclusive to Chinese media in Canada, and there's tons.
Mm.
And I didn't get it at first because I thought he was in China, but he's you know, rocking the giant Tim Hortons, and there's some Nestle ball of water. I'm like, oh, he must be here. And he's chatting away. And as you said, he said, oh, yeah, this, you know, the Wanzhou has some good arguments, and she's got a strong case on her side. And this caused a conservative explosion.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Trudeau went all rule of law, which seems to be popular among the centrists and lefts. Like, everything just goes down to rule of law now. But Andrew Scheer
noted
was
international law expert Justin Trudeau.
Oh, absolutely. Andrew Scheer was on, I think it was on the PMP. I saw a bit of that. And he's like, I would fire John McCallum. It's like, no kidding, man. You'd fire every liberal who's in any position. We know that. But it was interesting how he was, I wouldn't say shooting off, but it's really unusual for a diplomat to step in such a way. And I guess I don't know if he's overstepping because he spent so much time in government that he feels he can expound on what's
maybe
going on. But the way it was set up was I've got a feeling, just my opinion, that there was like, hey, John, can you like do this and kind of soften the blow a little bit? It's like, well, you know, she has some good arguments. It was odd, but, you know, we're going to let it go. So, yeah, the U.S. have until January 30th, I believe, to file the extradition papers. And with the arrests that you were talking about. Now, Robert Schellenberg, who is the drug smuggler, he's not a good guy. If you dig into his background, he was like a champion drug smuggler. I think one of the judges in Canada when he was charged says, you know, you're a disgrace to this country or something. So he went to China and like it was big time drugs. It was like a lot of drugs. But he got 15 years. But that case, they trotted him back out, show trial style, right? So he's already mm-hmm. serving the sentence, and it was like he's getting a do-over. They did it in a day, and it's like, okay, by the way, you're going down. And everybody kind of went, Then there are the Michaels, Michael Korvig and Michael Spavor. One is a businessman, one is a diplomat. I think Korvig was the ex-diplomat, that have been arrested. They're calling it retaliatory arrests. They're just somewhere. I don't know if there have been a lot of details. They keep showing their photos, but no one seems to know. It's just kind of like, yeah, they're okay. It's probably not great.
No.
And I'm surprised it's only been that. Now,
I mean, there's ways of torture where you don't, where it doesn't show up physically, but it's still torture.
Yeah,
you don't have the scars, the visible
they're
scars.
They're probably not going to get the death penalty for just whatever they're charged with. I have no idea. But it was interesting, Christy Freeland chiming in. She, on the one hand, she's like, oh, this case shouldn't be politicized. I was like, really? This is your reaction? Like, from the get-go, this thing is multi-layered political. And then she kind of turned it a bit. It's like, well, you know, the Americans demanded the arrest. So she's trying to soften it a bit too. It's like, well, you know, the Americans asked us to do this. But this could drag on for a long time. If she's out on bail, I think it's been about 7 weeks now, and then there'll be another month to evaluate what's going on. It could actually take years. This could drag on for years. Whether there's going to be, I don't think there's going to be an instant solve on it. Remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
My guess was that she would probably just very quietly disappear using money and connections. That's my prediction.
It's well, like, apparently
she just like, oh, okay, I'm going to go.
Apparently she has like another passport that if you're like very high up in the Chinese.
Yeah, they whisk you away.
Yeah, that you have like the secret passport that's like the better passport, yeah. I guess. But I mean.
Extra shiny.
On the other hand, they can just wait it out. I mean, it's another week, like literally a week today. Or yesterday, I should say, a week from yesterday, that the U.S. has to deliver papers. Now, meanwhile, in the United States, there's a government shutdown that is rapidly approaching day 40. So
maybe there's no one in the U.S. to fill the
paperwork. Is there anyone in the Justice Department who's going to file the paperwork?
Mm.
And to go back to McCallum's comments, he made a perfectly rational argument, at least one of the cases, because Donald Trump can't say the quiet part quiet. Where he said, like, oh, maybe we'll let it go in exchange for a trade deal. I don't know. You know, which is...
I'm great friends with President...
I'm President Xi. We're very good friends. Very good. So, I mean, it's hard not to get the smell of politics off. I mean, regardless who was president, there would be a definite smell of politics on this. But because, Trump can't say the quiet part quiet, it exacerbates the situation. Meanwhile, I mean... It sounds like we're heading to some kind of confrontation with China over Huawei anyway, because you have security advisors who are saying, like, don't
let them build a network.
Do not let them build a G5 or a 5G network here, because that's going to be a big security breach that if their network gets access to our networks. And then you have New Zealand, Australia, and the United States who have all refused to build Huawei's 5G networks in their countries. You have an Australian guy who went to China, is arrested now. So that's another diplomatic kerfuffle China's involved in.
Mm-hmm.
And even more damning, there's a British telecom company, the biggest British telecom company, is kind of like openly trying to avoid... building a 5G network.
Is it Vodafone?
From Huawei. No, I think it's Brit Telecom or something.
The old BT, yeah, which used to be the national.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the Bell of the UK.
And they've ceased all operations of Huawei's 3G and 4G network. So people are extraordinarily dubious of this company.
Yeah.
And so when you have China reacting like this,
Well, yeah, and China...
They're protecting their citizen, which is fine, but...
China was saying that, you know, the security concerns over this are ridiculous and they're not backed up by any facts. Now, this isn't Huawei saying this. This is the Chinese government, because there's really no line there, right? It's you know, they're saying, well, they're a private company. They're not really. The thing to watch with China will be when the language changes. And in diplomacy, language means everything. Right now, China is saying that they're going to take action if this goes ahead, if the U.S. goes ahead and extradites Wanzhou. But if they say something to the effect of there will be consequences, that's when people need to worry, because they have this, you know, it sort of escalates. The language gets more intense. They're not going to obviously declare war, but they have this way of
– Well, you don't have to
sort
really
of Confucian way of saying – You know, something that's probably really...
You don't have to declare war to, like...
There will be consequences. Well, that's very open-ended.
Declare war, yeah.
You know, we might sit down and talk. No, that's not what they mean. And while we do have a... They already have a... We were talking about this for the show, but while we do have a presence here, I mean... But as to how deep they're going to get into the systems, I don't think they are. If they claim to be free marketeers, then... A government should be able to choose whether they want Huawei to do the network or not. But, you know, maybe their tech is the top. We don't know, but...
Well, I mean, there's already been reports about, you know, Huawei phones having spyware on them. So, you know,
Take it from me, people. All phones have spyware on them. So, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
Yet.
Maybe my tinfoil hat gave me away. I don't know, but...
That's going to make it hard for your career as an influencer to...
I'm going
to
be an old... I'm going to get a telegraph, set it up in the basement, send out paper dispatches to people.
Yeah. Download the latest hit from Kendrick Lamar.
This just in. Chairman Mao has taken the capital.
Find it on iTunes.
Yeah. I think there's some potential there.
You think there's potential here?
Is the app Telegraph or Telegram? I heard that was sort of a freeware app, but it was designed by Russians, so... This is how deeply skeptical I am.
That's probably another app you don't want to use.
Anything that is an app that isn't from, say, a mainstream media outlet or us.
Yes. Let's take a break there. We'll see you back after the break. And you are listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We are open sources, and we will be right back. Night, life, light, and kids are high as kites. Fucking or fighting. Night vulture, more walking. New macho, got a Glock. Heart tarmac, lot reflector. Heat off and it makes us nauseous from fumes and toxins. And you can thank the sponsors for making it all possible. She's barely breathing. Yes, the flesh. It's a wheezing gas bleed through the steel and the glass saying the city collapses. The city collapses.
And that was Lee Reed. Lee Reed, Hamilton's own, is playing a show this weekend sponsored by us and the Downtown Guelph Business Association.
Lee he was Reed. The guest on Kana Creative this week, too.
Yes, if you want to hear more from Lee Reed, you can check out Creative Control with Vish Khanna online, I guess, somewhere.
Yeah, it's a podcast. So you
Lee
can...
Reed with the Tribe of Ansar, January 27th at the Royal Electric. Doors at 2:30. I believe it's kickoffs at 3. All ages, physically accessible. Mm-hmm. Pay what you can. Go downtown on Sunday. And check that out. And some of the stars of CFRU will be there.
Over the weekend, there was the March for Life in Washington, D.C. A couple of teens, or maybe more than a couple. There was a class that I was attending from an all-boys Catholic school Kentucky called the Covington School. While they were there, they were walking through the National Mall. A group called the Black Hebrew Israelites, which is on the Southern Poverty Law Center's list of nutters, because they are.
Hate groups? Hate
yes.
speech?
They're almost too pathetic to be called a hate group because they just go out and shout at people. But so this is all captured on video. The one video that got everybody's attention was the image of a elderly indigenous man named Nathan Phillips, no relation to the square that also bears his name. Drumming, trying to calm things down. Out of the crowd of white faces and MAGA hats steps young Nick Sandman, who stands there in front of Mr. Phillips, smiling, some people would say reassuringly, most people would say creepily. And it has become sort of a pressure cooker for the politics of now. And let me just preface this by saying the Black Hebrew Israelites are nutters.
Yes, that's a very nice way of putting it. I would put it another way.
People
but...
should not be paying any attention to. My second comment is the kids should just have been led away. Leave the nutters to their nutsy and just move on rather than, you know, having the one guy strip down to his short pants and start breakdancing and start doing
school
haka. Cheers.
They're doing a haka as
doing
well.
Doing the
right?
haka. It's,
it got all weird.
It did get all weird. Mm. And thirdly, I don't remember being taken to any protests when I was in school. Like, that wasn't a school trip. It seems a bit bizarre that they were going to the March for Life on as like a school trip. That's not what I would consider a school trip, but anyway, that's
March,
just me.
The March for Life is a very long-running and well-established anti-abortion protest.
Yeah.
So their private Catholic school decided, I guess, and maybe they've been doing this for years. I don't know the details of that.
Maybe.
They went. Now, I was also wondering if there was like a stand nearby where they were selling MAGA hats, because I thought it was odd. I wouldn't mind seeing some of the footage from the march itself to see if that was a thing. Like, is it a trend among the youngins? I don't know. This reminded me of a couple of things. You know, there's that old parable or adage about the three blind men are touching an elephant and one touches the ear and thinks it's a leaf. And then somebody touches the tail and thinks it's a bullwhip or something. Everybody saw in this thing almost what they wanted to see. And as the footage kept leaking out, which reminded me of the, believe it or not, the Zapruder film, and the Kennedy assassination, and how many different angles can we look at that? And how many?
You mean when Keith Hernandez spit on Kramer?
Oh yeah. Some guy lit up, opened an umbrella, and it's like, yeah, like this is what it was. It was like people are seeing slices of kind of what, you know, that picture. Mm-hmm. When you, if you look at the whole thing and you see that picture, anybody in any media office anywhere, it doesn't matter who you are, is going to be able to say, yep, there it is, right? Yeah. And context is everything, because the Black Hebrew Israelites started it.
Yeah.
And the stuff that they were yelling at everybody, they were yelling at the indigenous people march. Nathan Phillips and his very small crew, it seemed like there was just a few people
there.
Just
a couple of them.
They actually had a permit. Now, you know, the U.S., they take their First Amendment rights very seriously. Whatever. That's their thing.
That's their jam.
But everybody else there, the Black Hebrew Israelites are obviously just ranters, as they used to call them, I guess. And then the other gang, the Covington High students, were pretty much there as tourists after the March for Life on Washington was over. Although I did see one of the slices of footage had some kid blurting out, it's not rape if you enjoy it. Like they were just, it was teens out of control. Now I'm not making excuses for them. And the school didn't make excuses for them either. The school was unequivocal and said, our boys were in the wrong. And one piece of the footage showed a chaperone trying to corral them. I was like, okay, over here.
Several minutes later.
But it's... Maybe they're over having a smoke over by the Washington Monument, and then they're like, okay, it's time to go.
Well, there's also another
indigenous people.
There's also another piece of video where there was a couple of young women walking past a bunch of them sitting on the bench, and they're chanting, build the wall.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
these
are not innocent lost lambs.
And
the whole thing about wearing the hat, you make an interesting point. I don't know if they got them there or if they brought them from home. Like, wouldn't it be fun if we all wore our MAGA caps?
It would have been more interesting if they hadn't been wearing them.
Well,
right?
It would have been. Like, it would have muddied the waters of this even more.
Yeah.
But what I think is, first of all, if you're walking around downtown, you know, Nowheresville, Kentucky, and you're wearing your MAGA cap, chances are you're probably not going to.
Standard issue.
No one's going to.
In places, I guess.
No one's going to harass you or bother you about it. But the one thing they misunderstand is that to a lot of people, that is a symbol of hate. That is almost even a more powerful symbol of hate than something like the swastika, which didn't originate as a symbol of hate. You know, because the MAGA hat is born purely of a political stance of hate. And I realize that not everyone who wears it is someone who is racist or misogynist or homophobic or whatever, but a lot of people see that hat that way, so it's immediately provocative. The other thing you mentioned is the response from the school, not just the school, but also the mayor's office of the town, which leads me to think they were waiting for the day. They were waiting for the day that one of the students ended up in a situation that was going to get, if not national attention, at least regional attention.
Mm-hmm.
That something, they were ready for something to go down. And the third piece that I focused on is, in terms of the numerous thoughts I've had about this, is that we're getting a real insight into what happens when young boys are left to their own devices.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's the Covington School, whether it is Brett Kavanaugh and his friends in their youth, whether it is what happened at St. Mike's that was detailed before Christmas, and that investigation that's, to my knowledge, still ongoing. Young white boys left to their own devices end up a certain way. And the thing that struck me is, no matter how you feel about who was in the right, who was in the wrong, you look at that picture of Nick Sandman standing in front of Nathan Phillips. What I took from that is a white male teenager still has more power than an indigenous elder who is also a Marine veteran. And we did have this conversation on Twitter earlier that there's some question about whether or not he's a Vietnam veteran, but to almost everyone's knowledge, he is still at least a Marine veteran. So it is there's still an incredible power structure in all this. And Ava DuVernay, the filmmaker, tweeted earlier, she's referring back to Savannah Guthrie's interview with Nick Sandman, and she said, "Black children don't get a PR firm and a softball interview when they are in need of redemption. They get an open casket and a good sermon when it's time to appeal for grace."
Wow, that's...
Which is powerful when you start thinking about people like Trayvon Martin, who are almost always cast in the thug light, even if it's not intentional or not, which is almost the most insidious form of racism. And indeed, this is the most insidious form of racism. Seeing a white kid stand up to... or stand in front of an elder. And he, Nick Sandman said this in his interview, where he said, like, "I had every right to be there."
Constitutionally, that's probably true.
Nobody's disputing that he had every right to be there.
The thing is, it's not just groupthink. That was, right. It was, I call them a gang, but not lightly, because it is. This is a whole crew. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, you know, Nathan Phillips, regardless of his background or whatever, sounds like he went in to defuse the situation, even though the Black Hebrew Israelites were yelling at them as well.
Yeah.
Despicable things.
Yeah.
And they, what was the one they used on the white guy, the kids, the incest babies?
Yeah, they were like, incest babies.
And that this is one of the lighter things I'm saying. It's like, okay, these people are waving around Bibles and they're dropping the N-word and swearing. It's like, they're an interesting crowd. And they weren't very big either. But this,
no.
And again, I guess we're giving this all of this time probably because, and being fueled by social media as well, whereas something like this would have just came and gone. I'm sure many, many times in Washington it has.
Sure.
Somebody commented too on considering how close it was to Martin Luther King Day and what's gone on in the Washington Mall in the past. And then there's this. It's
well, the timing of it was especially bizarre too. I mean, this probably would have made news any time, but it was on MLK weekend, which was
which is a holiday weekend, which means news is a little bit slow. Although it was Super Bowl next weekend,
yes.
If it had happened next weekend, we wouldn't have heard a thing about it. Probably.
Maybe,
but I'm sure the analysis is still going on, and everybody's got their angle. And you know, was it the book depository? That kind of like, where was the shots?
Well, I think
the film, thankfully, taken from. It's fantastic
all the hot
that
takes,
nobody was injured, I would say.
Right. Well, that is.
Because it looked like that was about to happen.
It could have gone that way.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the hot take is that, you know, there was the framing of it was off originally, that the kids had swarmed Mr. Phillips. But I don't think the story was that, or is that, and the story shouldn't be that. The story should be the power dynamic, that we have this kid who gets the redemption arc, who one of the preeminent hosts of morning TV in the United States flies to him to get his side of the story.
Oh, is that what I didn't? I missed that completely.
Yeah.
That's what happened?
Yeah, well,
and some of the story was, well, he was coming at us. There's 200 of you.
Right.
Like, even 10
exactly.
of them.
Exactly. There was 200.
Even 5 of them. It's like, you're worried about this elderly dude, regardless of origin, with a drum? Like, this you were scared?
Right. I mean, they're
you
not innocent
skills,
lost lambs. I mean, they maybe in a sense that they have been in a bubble, that this is the first time that bubble has been punctured. But at the same time, the power dynamic, I think, is the story here that, you know, the white kid gets to explain. Also, it's a political dynamic too. As David Hogg pointed out, who was one of the organizers after Parkland, he was a student at Parkland. Sarah Huckabee Sanders goes on Hannity and says, "Oh, this is the media. They just can't wait to destroy a kid." And David Hogg, you know, retweets that and he says, "Oh, really?" Because of course he was identified by certain people in the right wing media as a crisis actor.
And to his credit, Nathan Phillips wants to meet with the kids. So wouldn't it be something if eventually he goes to their school? So I don't think this story is completely done yet, but
no.
It would, it remains to be seen. I think that would be amazing if that happened. And, you know, I'm wondering whether the kids will be wearing their hats at assembly, but we'll see. This is probably
I
a stay tuned, because I think, I mean, we're not going to spend gobs of time on it, but if it comes up again, we'll have to talk about it.
I hope I never hear the name Nick Sandman ever again.
Enter Sandman.
We might have missed an opportunity there for the music. Speaking of ongoing stories, Brexit is still coming, whether you like it or not. Theresa May came back from her deliberations with other party leaders on Monday, except for Jeremy Corbyn, I should add, that Plan B is basically Plan A, but Europeans working in Britain won't have to pay their £60 to stay. So, awesome.
What a deal. Wow.
So she's, yeah. Basically, the plan
is...
I'm
going to pay £1,000 for a new passport or something. What?
Yeah, basically, Plan B is to rework the backstop, apparently.
And the backstop is massively problematic. The and you probably heard that it sounds like the Troubles Take Two. Car bomb went off in Derry like it was 1969 and as if the Good Friday Agreement hadn't happened. There's been 20 years of relative stability and peace in Ireland, and a big part of that was, you know, devolution of the Northern Irish government, but also, I mean, Ian Paisley, the fiery reverend, is like, we will never leave Ireland. And Martin McGuinness formerly of the Sinn Féin, coming together and having talks and settling it in the border, the super squiggly border, if you've seen any of the graphics. This is going to throw a wrench big time into that. And the backstop is supposed to alleviate that. It has become one of the key questions. The Irish Taoiseach, which is the prime minister in Irish today. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Taoiseach. Leo Var. I'm going to blow his last name before I'm going to blow Taoiseach. Vardakar is called it a real dilemma. They're expecting the Irish economy to tank a bit. When I saw this is separate from Ireland, the divorce bill alone for the UK to pay is going to be like £39 billion, which is something like $68 billion Canadian dollars. Mm-hmm. That alone should give them pause,
right?
And of course, the other big burning question: hard or soft? It sounds like nobody, except real hardliners, want a hard Brexit. It's like, you know, if you let this go, it's going to be nasty.
Nobody wants
all
it,
around.
But everyone's preparing for it. And
it's kind of like nobody wanted World War I.
The EU negotiator, right? The EU negotiator said that, you know, unless there's a deal, unless the UK Parliament shows some sign of like moving forward on a deal, the assumption is it's going to be a hard Brexit. And
as long as that time, the March 29th timeline.
But I mean, that's
going.
What everybody's preparing for.
Yeah.
They're not going to stop preparing for it until there's a deal.
Until they stop.
And it passes like at least one vote. And then maybe they'll change their minds. The thing is that it's now been open to amendments, and there's been about a dozen amendments. One of them has been that if there's no deal by February the 26th, then the Parliament will then vote to pause or to extend the Brexit deadline to December 31st.
Yeah.
But then you have Theresa May coming out and saying, we're not going to extend the deadline. We're not going to stop Article 50. We're not going to have a second referendum. And it's like, well, you're kind of whittling the options here, mm-hmm. because you know nobody likes the deal that's been offered. You've made no real offers of concessions to make it a better deal.
It's,
and then you're saying, we're not going to do anything that's going to maybe pause or reconsider this.
I was going to say it's nickel and dime stuff. It's 5p and 10p coin stuff, which isn't the same, doesn't have the same ring to it somehow.
No.
And it should be mentioned that the amendments... nothing's passed yet. I think the next day they're going to sit on this is
29th.
The 29th. Another one of the amendments put forth also from the Labour side is along the lines of having a pause, but like to have a non-binding vote, which the referendum vote was as well, by the way.
Yeah.
To kind of test the House and see, you know, give a slate of options saying, okay, do we reconsider May's deal, plan A or B? Do we leave with no deal? Do we renegotiate? Or do we go into indie referendum too? So I think it's, you know, it's sort of like a mini referendum on the referendum saying, okay, what should the House do? It's obviously stalled. Record amount quashing plan A. A record amount will quash plan B. Of that chunk of people, I would say the majority of them don't want a hard Brexit. So it's what do they do? And maybe this one amendment, and also the amendment putting it into the future, because right now the future is looking like children of men, right? With yeah. stockpiling of goods, drugs. It was announced that Dyson HQ yeah. is bailing for Singapore, which is probably mostly for tax purposes.
Well, it's also because I think they bought an electric car company there. But what's fascinating is that James Dyson, who's the founder and the CEO of that company, was pro-Brexit. So this is another example of these pro-Brexit people saying like, we've got to get out of the European Union so we can get business going and bring jobs back. And it's like, well, no.
Doesn't like the sound of suction.
Going to see, yeah, it sucks, all right.
Suction.
See you guys later. I didn't mean me. See you later. It's bizarre that.
And I don't know if you heard this, Nigel Farage has, his daughters have German passports. It's like, Mister, let's get out of the EU. But my daughters, no, they can just kind of stay over here.
That was in the
Guardian. So I'm going to take it as fact.
Guardian.
Well, maybe we'll Snopes it and see if it's real. but
it's just incredible. Is Theresa May, and I say this every time we talk about this, Theresa May ran for Remain.
Yeah.
Everyone who was for Brexit in a position of authority to really do something about it, bailed. Farage,
ran
bailed.
Away.
Boris Johnson, bailed. People like Dyson.
Farage, bailed.
Yeah. What did I say?
Well, you said Johnson. I'm adding to your list.
Yeah.
There's like a whole
pile. I said Farage first.
Did you? Okay.
Sorry. Okay. But yeah, Johnson bailed. Dyson bailed. You know, protecting their business interests.
Moneyed interests running away.
And it's just like,
with their
Theresa
super
May,
passports,
you yeah. know what the right answer is here.
Just
and that is
stop
to call this
God
whole thing off. And what's interesting is that polling in UK is suggesting that people are slowly moving over to the idea that this is a bad idea. Why they're so slow about it, I don't know. But it was only 52-48 split on the referendum anyway. So if you start getting people going the other way and going, now that we know what this looks like, the ugliness that this looks like, why are we still doing this? And then maybe leave it up to the voters after the fact to say, like, you know, it was Theresa May. She may not be prime minister after the next round. She may not be prime minister next week. You know, you're going down anyway. Just do the right thing.
And as you know, from day one when the referendum hit, even though the DUP in Northern Ireland are backing May's government because they are hardliners, right? Northern Ireland voted to stay. Scotland voted to stay. Who voted to leave?
Right.
England and Wales. And I heard one idea floated, which was very interesting, is saying that those countries slash nations, and of course the UK is a confusing arrangement made of countries, but it is also a nation in unto itself.
It's a nation of countries.
That they come up with some kind of relationship on their own,
right,
saying, okay, England and Wales, you really wanted to go? You guys go. Scotland, Ireland, Northern Ireland, you come up with some other arrangement, everybody going to be happy.
But, you know,
don't think everybody's going
to
be happy.
It moves the backstop, actually, oddly yeah. enough, over to the main British Isles, because of course that would be the debate if Scotland stays.
Because I would guarantee it, speaking as people, that if and when all of this goes through and Brexit does happen, Scotland will definitely vote to secede, and I think it's going to be way from the UK, and it's going to be way higher a vote than ever before, because I know this for a fact that the majority of them want to be European. They see themselves as Europeans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it's been that good for the Scottish nation, you know, and depending, you can drive 30 miles south and get a completely different opinion, right? But that's, you know, this remains to be seen. But the pause has to happen or the crash is going to happen. I think the fear and the crash, this past week, supposedly $1 trillion in assets have been shifted. Mm-hmm. Some of that American, whatever. Over to Germany and other places. This mm-hmm. is $1 trillion. This has been removed from the pool. And what I mean, the UK now, particularly London, what's one of their main things is global finance, right? So
and what's funny is you have
they're pulling out. It's like, what's going to happen?
And you have European cities kind of actively promoting moving here. So it's like yeah. they're kind of already starting to pick over the anyway.
It's, the bag is packed.
The bag
just,
is packed.
The motor's running. They're just waiting for the high sign. It's going to be a... So,
that's a cool 20, message to leave the show on.
29th is going to be interesting, and we will be definitely following this.
Yeah, we'll come back to this. You can stay connected with us at opensourcesguelph.com. That's our website. Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, @OS_Guelph on the Twitter sphere. And you can find past episodes of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel, and you can find that on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can find me on Twitter @AdamADonaldson, or you can go to guelphpolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And DJ Sounds Good to Me should be here at the top of the hour here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more episodes of the show, and we will see you then.